This is a message for those that work in manufacturing across the UK and Ireland.
Do your engineering maintenance doors keep you awake at night? Are your engineers spending excessive time sourcing and finding the spare parts they need?
Eric's on-site teams take responsibility for your indirect supply chain, including both your MRO procurement and inventory control. And, as the name suggests, we do this while being based on your site. For more information, visit www.erics.co.uk/EM.
This episode of Engineering Matters is supported by The Optimistic Outlook.
The Optimistic Outlook is a great listen for fans of Engineering Matters. It is a podcast for anyone intrigued by innovation across sectors, whether you're in healthcare, infrastructure, energy, or beyond. The show is hosted by Barbara Hampton, CEO of Siemens USA, and offers invaluable insights relevant and impactful for all industries.
I think what you're really going to like is that Barbara Hampton is not just a CEO, she's a thought leader in the corporate world. In the podcast, you often learn from her journey to the top of Siemens USA, getting invaluable lessons on leadership, decision-making, and navigating the complexities of the modern workplace.
Barbara brings a wealth of knowledge, not just about manufacturing, but about its ripple effects across all sectors. Her perspective illuminates how manufacturing innovations are setting the pace for changes in healthcare, infrastructure development, energy sustainability, and more.
Regardless of your industry, The Optimistic Outlook is a source of motivation and forward-thinking ideas. Barbara's expertise in connecting dots between manufacturing and other sectors reveals actionable strategies for innovation and leadership in any field.
We invite you to explore The Optimistic Outlook and join a broad audience that values transformative ideas, including us. Search for The Optimistic Outlook wherever you get your podcasts. From the low hills of the Pugu Nature Reserve, the Umzimbazi flows down into the Zanzibar Channel. It's one of four short rivers in the region, and many more tributaries snaking their way through the city below. The channel takes its name from the island of Zanzibar, 80 kilometres to the north. The island had, for hundreds of years, been part of Oman's maritime empire. In the 1830s, Omani ruler Said bin Sultan had moved his capital from Muscat in Oman to the island. His sons argued over the succession and split Zanzibar and Muscat between them. Towards the end of his life, one of those sons, Majid bin Sultan, the ruler of Zanzibar, established a new city here. He called it Dar es Salaam, or Abode of Peace. After his death, the city's development slowed. His successor, Bargash, lost control of the region to British and German colonisers. Like Majid, they were attracted by the natural harbour offered by the channel. Over the 100 years from the city's foundation, it grew into one of East Africa's biggest cities and ports, under foreign rule and with a diverse multi-ethnic population. And in the middle of the 20th century, the city and the island became focal points for resistance, building up to Tanzania's independence and unification in 1964.
The city is now one of the fastest growing in the world, beaten only by Kampala in Uganda. It's a vital link for trade between East Africa, Asia, and the wider world. Its population has soared from less than 1 million in the 1970s to more than 5 million today. The UN projects it will have more than 13 million residents by 2035. Like many fast-growing cities, much of that development is not centrally planned, says Caroline Ray, Arup Regional Director for East Africa.
So the city has grown around basically a river basin and what's now become quite a big commercial port. The population has grown rapidly over the last few years, as with many cities in Africa, but it lies in quite a flat sort of coastal plain, but is characterized by rapid urbanization. What does that mean? It means you have a mix of sort of the core city center that grew around a central business district and where that trading used to operate. But then your residential areas just spread and spread and spread. Because it's on the coast, you have a boundary of the ocean. It can only spread in sort of the other semicircle around that original core. But it is characterized by urban growth. And that's not stopping anytime soon. The population, as with many cities in Africa, is anticipated to double in size before 2050. That growth of the city, growth of the footprint of the city, with some densification, but also just extending more out into those peri-urban areas that were rural, et cetera, just means that that footprint of the city is growing almost exponentially. Partly through the population growth, but also to a certain extent, rural urban migration, where people are looking for those economic opportunities within cities.
The Tanzanian government has been working to improve the planning of this development. They have paid keen consideration to how the city can be future-proofed against the evolving risk of climate change. Arup has been working to provide local officials and engineers with the data they need to support their work, relying on the specialist risk intelligence from the likes of Fathom. The focus is on how nature-based solutions can be used to prevent flooding, disease, and urban heating. These projections will need to consider both climate change and rapid urbanization.
Hello and welcome to Engineering Matters. I'm Rhian Owen.
And I'm Johnny Dowling.
In this episode, we have partnered with Fathom to learn how their global flood maps can be combined with local data and climate change projections. These can then be used by local planners in the world's fastest growing and most vulnerable cities to help protect residents from a range of harms.
The work in Dar es Salaam was financed by the Tanzania Urban Resilience Programme, a UK Foreign Commonwealth and Development Office funded programme delivered by the World Bank and the Quality Infrastructure Investment Partnership, financed by the Government of Japan. The Government of Tanzania is using the results to introduce green infrastructure into World Bank-financed infrastructure projects in Dar es Salaam, creating a more resilient urban environment for its people.
It was a project co-developed between the Tanzanian government and the World Bank, looking at the metropolitan area of Dar es Salaam and looking at infrastructure improvements there. The overall program is called the Dar es Salaam Metropolitan Development Plan. And one tranche of funding had been sort of implemented and developed, looking at infrastructure upgrades across the city. And another tranche of funding was about to be sort of signed off and ready for administration. And I think between them, they realized that actually we need to do things differently for this next tranche of funding. And they needed to integrate more green solutions, nature-based solutions within that.
Like many cities, Dar es Salaam's birth and growth has been tied to the sea. Water is vital to life and to trade, but it can also be a threat. Flooding and waterborne disease pose risks to its inhabitants. Green, nature-based solutions can help reduce those risks in ways that traditional grey engineering with concrete cannot. They can also reduce other harms related to climate change, such as urban heating and having a lower embodied carbon content.
Urban greening is important because some of the problems that are found in cities are to do with a lack of green space. Trees get cut down for development, you know, grassy areas get paved over, et cetera, et cetera. So some of the challenges within cities, particularly to do with surface water runoff, which then can result in flooding, you know, come from the loss of green within the city, whether those are formal green areas or just roadside verges and things like that, small scale or large scale. It all attributes to that surface water runoff, which can contribute to the flooding. In addition, in many cities, in definitely true in Dar es Salaam, there's a huge amount of soil erosion that comes. Now, that's partly because the soil can be more exposed. It's partly to do with the speed of that surface water runoff. That erosion happens, but then downstream somewhere, you get sedimentation, where that soil that's been eroded gets dumped somewhere else in the river channel. And so when it's dumped in the river channel, or in the case of Dar es Salaam, very much as the river comes out into the ocean, the capacity of that river to discharge its water into the ocean and away from the city is significantly reduced. So you've basically blocked the outflow from the city with that sedimentation. And so if you can keep more green within the city, you'll start reducing some of those effects. So when we're looking at flooding, erosion, sedimentation, they're all linked together with that loss of green within the city, together with some other climate sort of impacts that are talked about in terms of urban heat island effect. The temperature in the city is higher than the temperature around. The more you put concrete and buildings within the city.
IRIP's role was to help local planners understand how these green solutions could be used. They wouldn't develop individual projects. Instead, they would show how different project types could be used in different areas, the impact on each area, and the cumulative impact on the city as a whole.
What we were looking at was not sort of designing bespoke solutions for this area of the city or that particular flooded area or something, but it's really looking at, if you do this at scale across the city, if you keep on doing it in every neighbourhood, what's the cumulative benefit of that? And does it really make a difference? And trying to quantify those impacts and benefits. So we weren't coming in as designers to come up with, you know, what is the solution to flooding in that one specific area? It was more to look at, if you actually implement this across the city, does it make a difference? And the answer was yes, it does.
To help create this broad picture, IRIP needed to understand how water would flow through the city. They needed to understand how climate change and urbanisation would affect this. How, for example, would rainfall or sea levels change in different climate scenarios? How would new housing projects change water absorption patterns? And they would need to produce different models of nature-based interventions, showing how each would perform. These maps consider pluvial flooding from rainfall, fluvial flooding from rivers, and coastal flooding. And for this, they turned to Fathom. The company has its origins in the work of researchers at Bristol University. It takes data from well-mapped parts of the world, in the UK and US, for example, and uses these to create a global model. The research behind the company's maps is peer-reviewed and is verified by comparing the model's predictions with historic flood data. Gavin Lewis, Fathom's head of engineering markets, explains.
One of the things, because that we're very proud of here at Fathom, because of our scientific pedigree and background, we're very clear and transparent around our methodologies. So all the methods we use to develop our data, we publish in the world's leading scientific journals. All those papers are peer-reviewed heavily before they are published. And we make all those papers going through our methodologies, our validation of our models against different flooding events and also other independent models. We publish that on our website, and we encourage our end users to really review those papers and understand how we develop our models based on the principles that we've adopted. And now we know that when we benchmark our flood models against the observed behavior of flooding actually on the ground for these events, we know that we're actually within error of the flood models and the data that's captured. So we know we can predict with a great level of certainty how these floods are going to behave.
To use Fathom's flood maps to understand the future of a city like Dar es Salaam, Fathom must also take into account other variables, including climate change and urbanisation. And these are unclear both globally and locally.
We're in a non-stationary climate scenario at the moment. Things are constantly changing. So we have to provide a view of flood risk today under the current climate. And we take that and we have selected a whole range of global climate ensembles, modelled ensembles. We effectively pull those together and we develop from that a whole range of change factors that we apply to our current view of flooding. So what that allows us to do is say, okay, under different climate scenarios, different emission scenarios and time horizons between now and 2100, we can give a detailed understanding of flood risk anywhere in the world. And that's flood risk for flash flooding, river flooding, and coastal flooding.
Dr. Natalie Lord completed her PhD at Bristol, looking at climate change in the very long term to understand the impact this would have on nuclear waste storage. Today, she is Principal Climate Scientist at Fathom. The challenge of flood mapping in a time of climate change is the models we have that cover large regions or the whole globe are not at a high enough resolution to make accurate predictions for individual areas.
The lower resolution of the global climate models or the regional climate models we use, they would have biases in them that we would mean we wouldn't be comfortable directly using the data to drive our flood models. So the way we do it is we use what are called change factors. So this is essentially the relative change in a variable that we're interested in. So it might be extreme precipitation, for example. And we look at the extreme precipitation that the models project for a historical time period, and then how that changes for a future time period. We then apply that relative change to our historical baseline view of flooding. So the flooding at any particular location is kind of based on local scale data that we have, based on observations, which we have the most trust in. And then the climate change signal is extracted as a kind of relative change from climate models, which is then used to update or shift the baseline flood information.
It's Anthony Cooper's role to then bring together these different models and data sources.
I now work as a hydraulic modeller for Fathom. So this role involves taking lots and lots of data, some from outside of Fathom, some that we've developed inside of Fathom, and making it into a model that we then run the hydraulics for our sort of hydraulic solver to then obviously get the results. A lot of it is based around the sort of automation of this process. We're looking at the smallest thing we generally look at is Dar es Salaam is a very large city, but generally like a region, a state, or a country.
Producing Fathom's global flood maps requires a high degree of automation.
Our main goal though is, or our main sort of focus generally, is building our global flood maps. So that involves, it's not something you can do on just sort of manually taking a map of the rivers to the sort of area and sort of pulling them together. There's too much of the globe to do that on. So it's building this automation framework that we have to sort of build these models. And then a key part of my role as well when it comes out the other end is checking quality assurance of the data, because again, it needs checking. But again, this all can't be done manually. There has to be sort of automation to sort of work around this.
That combination of global modelling, local data and automation allows Fathom to create and quickly iterate flood maps for regions around the world. These can be used to help protect some of the world's most vulnerable communities in areas where detailed mapping has been historically lacking.
We were recently on a big government-to-government project. We're working with ARUP between the UK government and the Peruvian government that were looking at building better, and after the 2017 El Nino, there was significant impact on schools, hospitals and roads because of the severe flooding. And part of this government-to-government project in Peru was how they could build back better, understand the existing flood risk, but also where they're investing in building new schools and hospitals, where to site them to ensure they were future-proofed.
It was this ability to quickly create verifiable flood maps considering multiple climate change scenarios that led ARUP to work with Fathom again in Dar es Salaam.
We've worked with Fathom on a number of projects, including World Bank flood resilience projects in different regions around the world. So we have a trusted working relationship with them and very happy to bring them on board for this particular project. We were generating these sort of visualizations and maps of the possible future city So baseline on today's city, which was actually 2022, end of 2022, then 2030, 2040. Fathom were using the digital terrain data, et cetera, to generate all the hydrology, the physical characteristics of the land that result in the hydraulic modelling that they do. We were developing together the climate change scenarios, agreeing those with the client and trying to sort of understand what does that mean in terms of changes in rainfall intensity. They carried out the modelling of the floods for those different future scenarios, and we then overlaid their flood maps with those maps of the future city to start looking at what's the difference, basically, both with and without those urban greening solutions implemented.
Arup split the city up into squares and looked at the impact of different nature-based solutions in each area.
So the flood mapping and the land characteristics were modified according to how much urban greening was included in each of the neighbourhoods within the city.
These went through a number of iterations to consider a range of climate scenarios, along with each level of interventions.
There's quite a few iterations. So there's some base data that we kind of set up sort of separately. But then once we start the modelling and coming up with the different scenarios, there's quite a lot of iteration that has to go on. But it's because we weren't creating one design solution, it was really iterating just to make sure that we've covered all the scenarios. So it wasn't iterating to come up with a fixed design. It was sort of overlaying layers and layers of data in different future scenarios to create that understanding of, can we make a difference by adopting these approaches or not? How big is that difference?
Fathom needed to generate models that included climate change data, but the best sources of these data are not at a high enough resolution.
We're somewhat limited if we're looking on global scales or national scales in the data we have available. So the global climate models that we use are completely state of the art. You know, they're developed by a whole range of different universities around the world. They run on supercomputers. They're really like kind of cutting edge data that that we have available, but they haven't been specifically designed for many applications of impact modelling, which is when more kind of localized modelling is useful. The current generation of global climate models that I referred to earlier generally have a spatial resolution of around 100 to 200 kilometers per grid box. We actually use a subset of climate models which are part of a project called HiResMIP, so it's High Resolution Model Intercomparison Project. And these are run at a resolution of around 25 to 50 kilometers. So this project was specifically designed to better represent things like topographical changes, coastlines, and then also some of those atmospheric processes that are really important for changes in rainfall and tropical cyclones. So we select them because we think they give a better representation of how precipitation might change in the future, and then incorporate those into our models.
This iterative process was made possible by the automations Anthony describes.
Where we're pulling in other sorts of data, we perhaps need to do a little bit of work, but again, we've built our sort of automated framework to build these models to actually be quite resilient. So one of the key things that was different for Dar es Salaam was that they provided us with a better resolution digital elevation model. So across the globe, we do use a mixture of things. We use a mixture of LiDAR and FabDem, which is our produced data elevation model for the globe. But they had a better quality one for Dar es Salaam particularly. So what we could do was we could just pull in that data. And for something like that, it was very, very simple. It was literally to change a file name and it would just pull in a slightly different version of the data and rebuild it.
But Anthony and the Fathom team also had to consider data types they were less used to working with.
For some of the other things that we were looking at, particularly the urbanisation, this was a bit of a new one for us. So we had to have a little bit of a think about exactly how that would go into our model and sort of what the impacts have. Because urbanisation by itself, just going, there's going to be more houses, that doesn't necessarily have an impact on flood risk. So we had to have a bit of think about, so what does it impact on flood risk? So the key parts of urbanisation that we sort of think will impact flood risk is the impacts on infiltration, so how much water can go into the ground because it's going to sort of stop it and slow it down. And the impacts on sort of the roughness of the sort of area. So obviously where it's a really smooth surface, the water can run really quickly. Where it's sort of a very rough, so sort of scrub or brush typically would slow down water quite significantly.
By working through all these models, Arup were able to show some real benefits to the use of nature-based solutions. They would make 17,000 buildings less susceptible to flooding. The green areas in the city would be able to absorb around 300 swimming pools worth of rainwater, and as the world warms, they would limit the impact of urban heating.
The urban heat island effect in the city of Dar es Salaam at the moment is about 2 degrees warmer than in rural, if it was a rural in that same location. It's predicted to increase to another 4 degrees difference. But with the urban greening, that could be reduced by between 1 and 5 degrees. So really offsetting, if you integrate urban greening within the city as it develops.
The solutions Arup propose have been shown to have real potential. If implemented, they could have a big impact on the health and well-being of Dar es Salaam's residents. But implementation must come at a local level. This mapping gives local planners, engineers, and landowners the tools they need to understand their city.
The real output is the maps. And there's a catalogue of urban greening solutions and guidance on, you know, which land use types are most suited to which of these urban greening nature-based solutions. And so what the World Bank and other consultants have been doing since that data was made available to them at the end of the project is engage in multiple training programs, training local engineers, urban planners, architects, etc. That training has been sort of taken forward so that they can implement those projects in a different kind of way to how it's been done before. And, you know, the hope is that that dissemination of the importance of urban greening, plus some of the ideas about what could be applied where, will inform future policies and regulations for implementation as the city grows.
The design of the project could be used in other cities where flooding is a risk but data is poor.
The thinking behind this is not unique to Dar es Salaam at all. The specific hazards and problems in a city are, you know, can be different. But that process of land use change through rapid urbanisation combined with climate change is consistent across the, you know, sub-Saharan Africa. And so, yeah, we would love to replicate this in other places. We're already in discussions with some clients within the region about using some of these processes and ways of thinking and being able to visualize and understand impacts as a result of making interventions.
And Fathom is also working with the World Bank to make its global flood maps available to those who need them most.
We have, through the World Bank, they have funded data for 16 countries globally to provide data to their governments and local authorities for non-commercial use. So there's a whole range of countries from Pakistan to Burkina Faso where this data is available through the World Bank and through the arrangement we have with the World Bank for those local communities, stakeholders and governments to access that data free of charge.
We might not be able to predict how severe global warming will be or how fast every city in the world will grow. But by combining detailed flood maps with climate models and local data, urban planners and engineers around the world can have a much clearer picture of the best solutions for their cities.
Engineering Matters is a production of Rebe Media. This episode was written and produced by Will North and hosted by me, Johnny Dowling, and by Rian Owen. Editing and series supervision by John Young. Sound engineering by Ross McPherson. and the impact of our work is modelled and validated by Rory Harris. Special thanks to our partner for this episode, Fathom, and thank you for listening. You can find us on all podcast apps, on our website, engineeringmatters.rebeat.media, and on LinkedIn.